a quorum, so.
Okay, this is the regular meeting of the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System Board of Trustees. Welcome, everybody. Art, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, sir. Mark?
Here.
Kevin?
Here.
Jim?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Jorge?
Here.
Elsa?
Good morning, everyone. I'm here.
Vivian?
Here.
All present.
Great. Let's start with the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll move.
Thank you. Second?
I second.
Any discussion? Anybody see anything that was a problem? Hearing none. Would you call the vote, Art?
Yes, sir. Mark?
Aye.
Kevin?
Aye.
Jim?
Aye.
Jeff?
Aye.
Jorge?
Aye.
Elsa?
Aye.
Vivian?
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0.
All right, let's pick up with the funding policy review discussion that we started a week ago.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, before I turn it over to Dana and Paul, let me update the board. As per your direction, last week, I had a conversation yesterday with Joyce Garland and Liana Fedes from the city manager's office in relation to the board's consideration of the assumption changes that were that GRS presented last week. And they were generally supportive of the changes. They will take it back to Mike, but they do want to see a different set of scenarios on how it's going to impact the city on the city side. They want to see, much like the information that was contained in the materials that I sent yesterday, that different level of scenarios for each one of the levers that GRS is recommending. And so it was a timely conversation in relation to today's discussion. We'll be able to see some of that analysis that GRS put together and the variety of scenarios within each of the recommended assumption changes. They did, when I mentioned the fact that there was not going to be a significant impact to the city to the extent that the city continued funding at 27.5%, both of them nodded and agreed that there was not an anticipated change to the city's funding policy at 27.5%, at least in the very near term. Now, that may change as we get closer to 100% funded status, where their contribution, you know, we may not need to contribute 27.5% as we get closer to full funding. But until we do so, the commitment is there to continue funding at 27.5% in the near term. We did have a discussion about employee rates as well. And I sent them a bulleted point Microsoft Word document that outlined why we were looking at this, what the current assumption set is, and what the board was considering moving forward. I did also make sure to emphasize the point that the board could and will act independent of the feedback from the manager's office, but that the board felt like it was important for that communication and that collaborative effort on the part of the board and the city manager's office to continue the path to full funding and making sure we're working together in a cohesive manner moving forward. So they were appreciative of the conversation. I suspect we'll take the scenarios that are presented today back to Joyce and Liana for Mike's consideration. And you know, we'll get additional feedback if that's the route the board wants to go in time for our February meeting. So I asked Jeff Yates to join today. He was a part of that conversation yesterday, and I'll ask him here to chime in if he's got any, if he feels like there's pertinent information that I omitted.
No, I think you're right on path, Art. Really what they wanted to see was more of the scenarios, kind of what is the impact, so kind of different options. I'm here today just to sit in and listen and get in tune with the board, but I appreciate being here today, and thank you for letting me participate in the conversation yesterday. But I think we're on the right track. And I did have a brief, ever so brief conversation with Mike Ortega yesterday about it. And he's looking for Liana and Joyce to kind of give him some recommendation on that as well. Also, I have one announcement, if I may, Mr. Chairman. We have Anna Rosenberry will be the new ACM. It was just announced this morning. I haven't opened the email, so I don't have her start date. But Joyce will be transitioning back to retirement life, and Anna will be taking over as the ACM. ACM CFO in the city manager's office. So, we'll have more detail on that. And I think there was a release going out that went up to council today and so forth. So just be mindful that's a change that is coming, and then we'll continue to work on that. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks for the report, Art. I guess I'm wondering, do we have further discussion, further presentations? Are we ready to have somebody put forward a motion?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, my thought and my recommendation on this would be to listen to what GRS has to say in relation to the materials that are included in the packet. Understand the scenarios. And then I think in the spirit of the board's direction last week, it might be prudent for us to take these scenarios back to the city manager's office and get their feedback in totality of the materials that they've asked for. Again, this is at the board's full discretion, but that would be my recommendation in line with and in spirit of the conversation that we took place last week. So that would be my recommended path forward, but the board is obviously free to act and in a way that they see fit.
Thoughts, folks?
This is Kevin. We want to hear the presentation today. I think we have time to hear the presentation from the actuaries and go through the updated information they provided. You know, when I've read through it, I think it's very, it's a very good complement or additional information for the board to use to make their final decision. I kind of agree with Art. I think, you know, one, I don't think there's a big urgency on nailing down this changes to our assumptions. I mean, I think we should be able to do it fairly promptly, but, and I understand it was kind of my encouragement, but I think now that we've touched base with the city, again, we'll still be acting independent, but I think it's important for us to follow through and at least show them the information that they've requested, and then, you know, continue Art to tell them that, you know, it's really an independent decision, but we're always curious to hear what the city is thinking. It's good to know that at least they're intending at this point in time to continue with a 27.5% funding. And that, you know, that makes it easier for them to accept some of the changes that we're likely to make.
All right, if there's no disagreement, let's move forward with the balance of the presentation, with the updated presentation. Is that snow in your background, Paul? Or is it just like a pretty video?
Oh no, it just started to snow a few minutes ago.
But you're in Denver?
In Denver, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't want to brave the idiots driving today, so I stayed at home.
Let's move. Okay. All right. Let's go.
All right. Can you confirm that you are just seeing the presentation?
Yes.
Yes. Well, you also look ready for the storm with the wine rack there. All right. So we are going to pick up where we left off last week. We did have some requests to expand some of that quantitative work, so we'll go through those. And that'll give you a little bit more sense on how some of these changes that we're considering could potentially impact the city contribution requirements. So just as a reminder, the actuarial contribution, which is basically what sets the city's contribution requirement under the ordinance, is made up of three pieces. So normal cost, administrative expenses, and the amortization of the unfunded liability. And then the parameters of that amortization are the amortization period, which is currently 20, and then level dollar or level percent of pay, which is level percent of pay for Tucson, and then open or closed amortization, which is open for the city of Tucson. And so our most important recommendation for change is to move to closed layered amortization. Stop refinancing the unfunded liability in that actuarial contribution, which is what is allowing that actuarial contribution to continue to drop off. And then there are two recommendations that are not in the must-do category, but would considerably strengthen that underlying contribution requirement. And so the first one is to reduce that amortization period. Shorten it from 20 to 15 years, which would get it more in line with the funding goals that were established when the 27.5% was put in place. And then the other is to reduce the investment return assumption to 6.75 and take some pressure off that assumption, given that we've seen reduced forward-looking expectations from the investment consultants. We know that as it stands right now, none of this should change the actual contributions into the plan. Right now, all this lives beneath the 27.5% that the city has been putting in. We don't have any reason to expect that the city will stop contributing at that level, but we do know that the only thing that the board can enforce is this underlying actuarial calculation, which is impacted by these decisions. All right, so getting into some of these scenarios, the baseline scenario and then scenarios 1, 4, and 5 are scenarios that you've already seen, but what we're going to do is break it out a little bit more in 2 and 3 so that we can truly isolate the impact of a single change. So looking at the baseline, if the plan earns 7% on market value this year, this fiscal year, at the next valuation, we would be looking at an 18.51% employer requirement. And then if we earn 7% again during fiscal year 2023, that would drop off to 15.81%. So a big delta between what is required and that 27.5%. If we were to close the amortization, so scenario 1, again, that doesn't impact anything in the first year. We're starting at 20 years, same as we always use. It's not until the second year that that would drop down to a 19-year amortization. So in the second year, it holds that requirement up a little bit more at 16.14%. And then in scenario 2, if we go back to the baseline, we don't close the amortization, but we just move to a 15-year amortization, we shorten that period, that's a bit more impactful. And so at 2022, we're at 21.19%. And then the following year, 17.92%. In scenario 3, again, going back to baseline, 20 years, not closing anything, just changing the discount rate. So we're at 20.09% in the first year, 18.02% in the second year. So, you know, going to the 15-year period is a bit more impactful than changing the discount rate. But then in scenario 4, we look at adopting 2 of those changes. So moving the discount rate to a 6.75 and closing the amortization. So first year is going to be the same as the last scenario, 20.09. But then the second year, it holds up a little bit more at 18.19. And then scenario five is adopting all three changes, 6.75 discount rate, 15-year amortization period, and closing the amortization, 23.12 in the first year, 21.01 in the second. So again, this is all looking at 7% market returns in fiscal year 2022 and 2023. Employee contributions are based on 1/2 the normal cost, rounded to the nearest 25 basis points. And so normal cost does not depend on actual investment returns. It depends on assumptions. And so if we were to change to a 6.75 discount rate, it would push the recommended employee contribution by 25 basis points for members of the groups that are in the variable rate contributions. So between 2006 and 2011, and then 2011 and later. If you recall, what's that?
Dana, hey, I'm sorry. I see, if you're in presentation mode, you can't see hands up, but Jim has a question.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, folks. Art, this is one for you. Doesn't this particular page, page four, answer the questions that the assistant city managers posed to you in terms of seeing the effect of each of these variables changed independently?
Yes, sir. I think this slide in combination with the slides that follow with respect to assuming a return that's less than 7%, I think those are the scenarios that they'll want to see moving forward. And this is the near term. So one of the things I was going to say is can GRS put together something that says in 24, what would be the scenario, right? I don't want to take this thing too far out. I mean, FY July 1, 23 is 24, but what does it look like in July 1 of 24 for the fiscal year 25? I think those are the kinds of questions that they'll need to see moving forward, because the sense I got from walking away from that meeting yesterday is that they are anticipating a downturn in the economy, which could put some pressure on the city's overall financial plan. With respect to the budget in each of these out years. So I think they're anticipating that. They're very likely building some of that in their assumption set as they develop their five-year financial plan and their five-year forecast for budget purposes. So I do think this answers the question. And if we could get an additional year layered in here, it would probably strengthen the case. But yeah, my thought is to share this presentation directly with them once we've had an opportunity to vet it as a board. I have another question here on the employee contributions, but I see that I think Pete has a question, and I gotta go here to the participants to see who else. So, Jim, did you have another question?
No, that was it. My last comment. I want to apologize to Dana for interrupting her presentation, but this I thought was an important question.
No problem at all. I definitely welcome questions along the way.
Pete, did you have a question?
Thanks, Art. I'm not sure if it's a question or just a comment. Reminder to the board that currently the employee contributions on those variables are not the amounts which are being funded. The city has taken the last 2 years and determined not to fund at the rates which are recommended, but instead have the employee fund at the lower rates. So any changes would then have to be, that would be an impact of what the city chooses to do on the employee contribution side.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Pete. That was actually going to be my question to Dana. Because at present they're still 6.75 and 5.25. So presumably the baseline is, that's the recommendation, but that's not what's actually in in practice, not what we do in practice, because the mayor and council have, for the last two fiscal years, not adopted the board recommendation with respect to employee contributions. I do think, based on the meeting yesterday, there is a likelihood that they will increase they will adopt the board's recommendations for fiscal year 23. But I largely think that also depends on the other factors at play with respect to insurance rates, and then whatever is being considered with employee compensation. Vivian?
That my question, and I think you mentioned it, is what's the current employee rate? So I see that second bullet point, but that just says this is a change in the discount rate, right? It would go from the 7% to 7.25%, from the 5.5% to the 5.75%.
All right, so right now today, the tier one variable are 6.75%, and the tier two is 5.25%.
Okay.
So the recommendation that the board put together for adoption by mayor and council in November would push these rates up from 6.75% to 7, and 5.25% to 5.5%. So then the board can see then in this third scenario, they'd be talking about another 0.25% increase in 20. As soon as these would go into effect, as soon as the assumption rate changes would go into effect.
Right. So if you were to adopt the 6.75% discount rate, then it would push these recommended rates up 25 basis points. So there would be a 50 basis points disparity between what's actually being charged and what's being recommended at that point. And, you know, if those recommended rates cause any sort of heartburn, I think that there are ways that we could get around that in the funding policy. I think we could say something like the member rate must be at least 1/2 normal cost, but to the extent the city is contributing in excess of their actuarial contribution, that they could use that to provide continued stability of member contributions or something like that. You know, I think we'd want to word it so that we don't necessarily leave the door open for them to reduce employee contributions, but maybe we also don't force their hand in raising employee contributions. I think that there are ways we could do that within the funding policy to not force that change.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
If I could just say that, remember that when the mayor and council decide to keep the employee contribution rates flat, that's actually a code change, because the 1/2 normal cost contribution rate for the employees, that is a code provision. So, you know, that's been a little bit tricky. We've handled it with code amendments, but I am hopeful that we get back to the code level standard for the employee rates, and then it is easier to make these adjustments flow through in the future.
All right, so slide 5 is the same scenario that we looked at last week, again, just broken out a bit more. And this scenario is, what if we earn 7% in fiscal year 2022, but then we earn minus 20% during fiscal year 2023. And I'm gonna focus our attention more on the right-hand side of the chart, just because I think that when we look at these downside risk scenarios, we're really more worried about, what if we adopt 2 or 3 of these changes? Are we going to force a breach of that 27.5% and force the city to increase contributions? And this, in this scenario, we're not forcing that breach in any of these scenarios. I'm going to focus your attention on the very bottom set of numbers, because I think if we're talking about closed amortization, we should be talking about closed layered amortization. I think closed without the layered is not practical. And so in scenario 4, adoption of the 6.75% discount rate and closed layered amortization, we would hit 20.06% in the 2023 valuation. If we were to adopt all three changes, then we would hit 24.33% of pay. So then slide six, looking at a bit more extreme on the fiscal year 2023 return, and it's also looking out one more year with no recovery. So looking at a 7% return fiscal year 2022, the year we're in, minus 25% return in fiscal year 2023, and then following that up with a 7% return, so no recovery in that year. You can see that in scenario four, we still don't breach that 27.5. We're at 23.42% for the city requirement with the layering. But on scenario five, we're at 27.89. So basically in that type of event, the city would have to put in about 0.5% more than the 27.5. So then slide seven. Oh, go ahead.
Dana, hold on. I have a question. Are our friends from Callan on? I think I saw them on.
I think I saw Paul.
Paul, there you go.
Yes, yes, I am, now that I can find the mute button.
So I have a question, Paul, in relation to a potential minus 25% return for our assets in 23. I know that last week, Gordy mentioned that the capital market expectations over a 10-year period are approximately about 5.8%. And if I remember correctly, the variance between, you know, one standard deviation in that was about 12% either way. Is that accurate? So in other words, what I'm trying to get at is even if the board said, okay, well, the capital market expectation is really 5.8% on a passive basis, right? Just without factoring in what our managers are adding to our alpha, and we realize the one standard deviation change to the negative, then we're really not looking at a 25% decline. It's really more of a minus 7%. Am I looking at that the right way? Or
you are. Yes.
Okay.
Minus 25 in any 1 year period would, I'm not saying it's not possible, but the probabilities are very small. I mean, over the last, I'll have to double check this, but I think the total fund has had negative returns in only a couple of years over the last couple of decades, and none of them have been double digit returns. So I think that's kind of a sensitivity thing. Theoretically, yeah, that's possible, but the likelihood of that happening, particularly given the amount of assets you have in real estate and infrastructure, which generally lag the public markets, it would take an extraordinary decrease of greater than 50% in the equity markets to even get close to that. So it's possible, but it's highly improbable.
I guess, so piggybacking on that, I guess the question for the broad group is, would it make sense to model then what maybe one standard deviation regression from the capital market expectation? Would that be a more realistic outcome? I mean, I guess you can take minus 25 and say, that's the worst that could happen, and we're barely approaching, you know, in 2024, if you took all three of them, we'd exceed that 27.5%. It's just something for the board to consider. Thank you, Dana. Mr. Chairman, sorry about that.
Yep, no, good commentary. Okay, so slide 7 is actually a bit more extreme. Slide 7 is 7% fiscal year 2022 minus 25% in 2023. And then not only do we not get any recovery, but we actually follow that up with a 0% in fiscal year 2024. And so in that case, scenario 4 gets up to 23.91. Scenario 5 gets up to 28.5%. So an additional 1% from the city in that situation. Okay, so we did get the question of how these changes would impact our time to full funding. And the answer is, if the city does not change their behavior, they put in the 27.5%, then barely at all. And even then, it's really only the change, like the theoretical time to full funding, not the actual time to full funding. What's really going to matter are actual investment returns, actual contributions. So, you know, if we change the investment return assumption, we've changed our target a little bit. We're basically shooting a little bit higher, but that's not really going to be the determiner of how long it actually takes. But in terms of our report, in terms of what we show in the report, the year of full funding that we project in our report, if we were to adopt a 675 assumption change, that would be 1 year later. So not a big impact. So again, if the 27.5% is in place, these underlying policies aren't really going to impact the trajectory of the plan, but the 27.5 isn't guaranteed. So slide 9 shows us how changing some of these policies would protect the plan in terms of its trajectory. So the top line there is the 27.5% contribution. If we get it, we are in 7% on market value. We get there in 2028. The bottom line is if we don't get the 27.5%, but instead we get the city required actuarial contribution based on the code. Admittedly, still not that bad. We basically hang out in the low 90% funded range. If we close the amortization, still 20 years, we get that red line. We get that extra push to get us to full funding in 20 years. And then the gray line is a little extra push to get us there in 15 years if we close the amortization and make it a 15-year period. So slide 10 is basically the same thing, but everything is on a 675 basis. Basically takes the same shape. Our starting point funded ratio is just a smidge lower. So with 27.5% contributions, we get there in 2029 instead of 2028. And with those closed amortizations, we still get there in 15 or 20 years by design. Our current baseline actuarial policy hovers just south of 90% instead of above it. So Art, this is a little bit sort of what you're talking about here. You know, we did have a very strong return in fiscal year 2021, and slide 11 basically says, what if we have to give some of that back? What if we earn minus 5% in fiscal year 2023? And we see, you know, any of our closed amortizations, we're still going to push the fund back to a strong position. With the current policy, if they just contribute the required contribution, then it's going to hover around 80% funded. Slide 12 shows that most extreme scenario. So that's a minus 25 followed by a zero and no recovery thereafter, just 675 thereafter. The plan actually dips below 60% funded. And with the policy that's in place, without the 27.5% guaranteed, we make a very slow recovery, getting back up to about 65% funded over a 30-year period. Again, the closed amortizations are going to be what's going to be make that push back to full funding in 15 or 20 years. In this extreme scenario, they are going to require higher than the 27.5% and get the fund there faster, but at the expense of some additional city contributions. These lines do not show the impact of layering. So basically with layering, as we're experiencing these drops in funding over the first 5 years, so basically we had that really big loss, and we're going to recognize 1/5 of it each year with our asset smoothing. And each year as we recognize it, we're going to create a new amortization base for that. What that's going to do is dampen those gray and red lines. And for example, the red line, the 20-year closed, it's actually going to look much more similar to that 27.5%. If you think about it, a 20-year closed with layered amortization that experiences losses in 2023 and 2024 and not thereafter is by definition going to be projected to be fully funded in 2044, which is 20 years from the 2024 loss. And so, you know, this red line would meet up with 100% funded in 2044. So again, that's going to push it out and look more like that 27.5% line. All right, so again, the funding policy that's in place is relying on that 27.5%, which is not part of the city's requirement. And so the underlying actuarial policy that we do have in place is not strong on its own. So we do recommend making some changes to that underlying policy to give the plan and its members some additional assurance of strong funding to the plan. But if we do strengthen the underlying commitment, we basically move our starting point and we do increase the potential for having to ask the city for more than 27.5. But we can do our best to manage that. We have our 5-year smoothing. We can implement that layering. So we're really trying to minimize any impact from short-term adverse experience. If the city contribution requirement goes up, it's because there's been a major hit to the plan and it's not been followed by a recovery. So again, strong recommendation to do closed layered amortization, no more refinancing. Reducing the discount rate to the 6.75 and reducing the amortization period to 15 years would strengthen that policy and would be more in line with best practices. All right, and that's all I have for today.
Hey, Dana, this is Art. I was asked this question yesterday and I gave my own answer, but I'm curious what the answer is. And the question was, what is the push to close the amortization period? Not shorten, because I think they understand the shortening of the amortization period, but what's the push to close the amortization period? And I'll pause there for your response.
So the push to close the amortization period is because we look out in the future and we see that actuarial requirement dropping off because of the open amortization and because of the outstanding asset gains. And so, you know, what happens if we don't have an immediate market correction? What happens if the plan continues to do well, the stock market continues to behave nonsensically, and we get good returns over the next couple years? Well, we see that rate, we see it dropping to 18, we see it dropping to 15, you know, another year out, maybe we're at 13, another year out, maybe we're at 11. Well, then what happens then? We finally do get our market correction. In the meantime, what if we've gotten a new city manager? They aren't committed to that 27.5. They've gone down to this, you know, 13 or 11, and then suddenly we have this market correction and we've got to, you know, increase that contribution significantly. Let's hold that contribution up. Let's not let it drop to 13 to 11. Let's make sure we have something decent in there that is our guarantee.
Okay, thank you.
Nope.
I have a question for Dana. Yep. Is the layering becoming your industry standard?
Yeah, I think I would say it is. And especially, I mean, it just makes sense with closed amortization. Closed amortization is a great practice from the plan's perspective, but from a practicality, doing closed without layered is impractical. And so I think dealing with public sector budgets, we can't do closed without the layered. And closed is best practice.
Thank you.
Hey, Dana, it's Art again, and I'm sorry, but I probably have more questions than I should at this point. But I, in thinking about the slide and the presentation and the questions that I was asked yesterday, would it make sense to show the city? And I know you have a baseline there, but then you go on to project out in what it would look like in 2023. What it would look like in 2024 and then, or 2022, 2023, and then 2024 under the various scenarios. But I'd have to go back and I guess I can look at it here. Are you showing what if the city did nothing in those each respective years? Because I think that's what they're, if I understood the questions yesterday, that's what they'll want to see is if we did nothing, if the board did nothing and kept everything the same, and you modeled the scenarios that you had where it was 7% return minus 25% with the followed by 0% followed by 675 where there would be no recovery, what would our plan look like at that point? And it may have been in there, but if it isn't, would that be possible to provide that?
Wait, can you say that again? So I didn't, the do nothing, so you're saying in terms of the do nothing, are you saying just don't change the funding policy and then
don't change the funding policy or the assumptions, but we still experience the investment returns that you modeled on those slides? Because I think if I were to put myself in their shoes, well, it's well, what if we did nothing at all? What would we see with those same returns versus if we layered in all of these other changes, what does that look like for us in terms of the actuarial contribution, right? I just, that to me seems like a very, this seems like what they would wanna see.
Okay, my sound was cutting in and out. I'm sorry about that. But, so here, let me share my screen again.
And Art, just to clarify, while Dana's pulling that up, when you say do nothing, we're still assuming that the city's committed to making the 27.5% contribution.
Yes, because that rang through very clearly yesterday.
Yeah. So yeah, I think Dana's got it up here now.
So, you know, I'm not sure if you're more focused on the funded ratio or if you're more focused on what that actuarial requirement would be.
I'm focused on what the city would have to contribute to the plan, because ultimately that's what they're looking at is what are we going to do for what's our employer contribution going to do if we make these changes, right? That was their I think that was their chief concern.
So to be clear, this is we act as though we haven't had these two meetings in terms of making any decisions, or we decide to do nothing. And they want to know what happens if they continue to contribute, but the market turns on us at some point. That's what you're asking, right, Art?
Yeah, I guess I'm asking from trying to put myself in Joyce's and Liana's shoes and Mike's shoes and saying, look, if the funding policy was kept whole, and I'm not saying that it is, but what would it look like if it was kept whole as it is now and we experienced these return, these market value of asset returns?
Without versus, layering, without
right, closed. Just
yeah.
Just as is yeah. Now versus what it is. And I think this is, if this is the slide, then yeah, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah. And so, I mean, each of these scenarios assume the 27 and a half continues to get contributed. So, you know, in the scenario where we earn the minus 25% and the 0%, in the do nothing scenario, in the leave the funding policy alone, the city's contribution requirement would be 21%.
See, and so that's what they're going to look at, right? If I were them. That's what I would look at is, okay, baseline is 21. If we did this and we experience it, then it's going to 29. That's what I, if that's where I'd be focused. And that's where my guess is they're going to go. Is that's what they're going to look at. I'm just trying to help the board understand what they're going to anticipate, or what I would anticipate, I guess. I see Paul, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just wanted to correct a statement I made earlier, and that is, I found a file with fiscal year returns over the last 15 years. The fund has had negative returns in two of those 15. It was during the global financial crisis. And in 2008, the fund was down negative 5. But in 2009, it was down 21%. So that 25% negative return is something that you got close to back in 2009.
Can I ask a question? In terms of the city's contribution rate, if we look at, say, slide 10 data, the 27.5% rate, which is basically our do nothing on this graph, right? If we leave everything the same, the 27.5% is our do nothing line. And I'm wondering if it would make sense to show the city the difference in cost from, say, 2027 to, say, 2037, because when the city's contributions drop down to normal cost, there's a savings there. And it's shown visually here, but we don't have dollars to put to that. And I don't know, maybe that's not appropriate, but to me, I would think about, like, how much will I save by funding this faster?
Yeah, we could contemplate something like that. I mean, you're definitely creating interest savings by paying that higher rate.
Yeah, and again, all of this may be useful information, really, and it's really for me, so that when I get posed the question from the city manager's office, I have the coordinating response. But I do think it's important to understand from, you know, trying to figure out what questions I could anticipate in my next meeting with them. Vivian?
Yeah, I agree with Yor and Cassie. Is there a way to provide a visual from a dollar perspective, you know, current state compared to these other scenarios? I mean, maybe not on this slide, but maybe on another one where it shows the dollar comparison, and or maybe the change between the years.
Yeah, I'm sure we can come up with something. The one thing I do want to avoid is acting like we think the city is going to put in the lower actuarial requirement, you know, because for most of these scenarios, we're not actually changing the outcome. You know, we're showing the additional protection, but we're not assuming that the city is going to say, okay, we're going to reach out and take this lower rate. And so I do want to avoid sort of giving the expectation that the city is going to take the actuarial contribution and contribute differently based on what the actuarial contribution is. But I'm sure that there is something that we can put together to illustrate the interest savings from better contributions versus, you know, not as good contributions. So I'm sure we can address that point somehow.
Yeah, And I see Jim has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Art. Yeah, we're going in a good direction here. I think if we could have a chart that shows the maintenance of the city's current contribution rate, showing how that would save in the future. It's kind of the compounding effect of money. So that short term, if we stay the same long versus dropping back, it will long term benefit the city X number of dollars, all other things being equal.
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
Let me just toss out a counterpoint, and that is, I guess I worry a little, in the abstract at least, that we're going to have so much, it becomes very easy to say, well, how about if we look at it this way, or what if we shift that, and at some point you get so much that what you have may not mean a whole lot, and I just want to be sure that we're not getting information overload.
Well, Mark, I see this as giving Art ammunition. He doesn't have to present everything he has, but he should be able to answer most reasonable questions.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I was just going to say that much of the information is probably going to be for my use in discussing it with the city manager's office.
Okay.
Not, and it could come back to the board. It doesn't have to come back to the board. So, you know, that's, I wanted to make sure I clarify that.
Pete.
Yeah.
Kevin.
I just want to thank Dana and, Paul for putting this stuff together. I think it's very, very helpful for me to better understand the impact, you know, of two or three key variables. You know, the tables were really helpful for me to just understand the impact on the contribution rates. And the graphs to me show a real critical point as well, which I knew, but it's, you know, graphs always help me better understand something. What it shows to some extent, Art, this is to the city's question is, well, if we don't close the plan, we may never get to fully fund it. And I think it's everyone's objective to get to a fully funded plan. And now we're just trying to determine, okay, if we close it, you know, what's the appropriate time frame to get to that, to have that some assurance. And also remember, when you talk to the city, the it was kind of the database, the information we had of, must have been, that Dana had sent across, or probably 25 or 30 different public funds, and I think most of them had a closed plan. Okay, so I mean, I think there's lots of justification in terms of why it's appropriate to go to a closed plan. So again, I just thank you for all the information. And one, I guess another thing, you know, I understand Callan or Paul's point in terms of the extreme, and yeah, I kind of was the person that threw out this 25%. I didn't look specifically back at 2007, 2008, 2009 time period, but I was figuring it was going to be in that range. You know, we could dial these down a little bit just to say, okay, most people will remember 2008 and 2009, the impacts to the marketplace. You could just say, okay, if for some reason we came across a scenario like 2008 and 2009 and use similar numbers, whatever that is, minus 5 and minus 20, and use those numbers rather than these more extreme numbers that I've plugged in, it may be something that a person can relate to, but I think it still demonstrates, yeah, they might have a little bit of pressure, but you get to a real extreme situation before they have to fund above 27.5%. In fact, with those lower numbers of say minus 21%, I think is what Paul referred to, you may not even get to the 27.5%. So, I mean, that's maybe another way to put it in context. You know, I get to be kind of a theoretical guy, you know, and I think we've had very high returns for the last 10 years. And sooner or later, there is a regression to the mean. So I was just trying to sense test how that can impact these numbers that were put forth today. But I think, you know, talking to the city, that Ernest, you know, probably just some look back at what 2008, 2009, if that occurred again, what that could mean. But I think there's still plenty of headroom for the city to work with it. And again, I think all this information, very useful for our committee, our board, to make the decision of a possible change. And I think a change is merited. Now we'll just have to decide how much. But again, I think it's continuing to be important to keep the city involved in the discussion, but also very important to keep it clear that it's our decision, not theirs. We're just trying to give them a heads up and get some view of theirs, not necessarily input, but just their view. That's all I had.
Pete? Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks. Sorry, I had a little mute button issue there earlier. So I don't want to distract the board, but I do want to ask Paul and Dana, this discussion is a deep dive into the changing the actuarial assumptions, which changes the funding. But when you were making a presentation at the retreat, you used the analogy in the discussion of landing the plane several times and using some sort of techniques and thought process on how to gradually step down the contribution rate so that it was not a cliff event at the full funding. I was wondering if there was some plan to come back with that discussion or if that's at some future date.
So I think that it is something that we will want to contemplate just from a cash flow perspective. And, you know, we probably don't want to just drop off that cliff. But I think just for making things, how do I want to put it? Basically want to bite off one bite at a time. And the plan security is the most imminent thing. Like, let's make sure we get this strong funding and policy in place. And so I think we will want to talk about that some more. We might want to glide past that contribution at some point, but I'd like to get these main parameters settled first so that we know what we're working with, what we know is our actuarial contribution versus that 27.5. And then, you know, if we get these strong parameters in place and we still find ourselves with a lot of distance between that 27.5 and what we consider to be a strong policy, then at that point, maybe we'll talk about potentially reducing that 27.5% recommendation over time to sort of glide past that contribution policy.
And to maybe add to that, to beat that analogy to death, you know, we think of this as kind of our initial descent, and this is giving us a, you know, a good target to maybe look towards as we get closer to that point that is going to fall off, and to strengthen that policy right now. And then as we get a little bit closer, we can use this information and then also, you know, current market conditions to make a better decision on how to attain that glide path and to get to that, you know, a reasonable contribution and not have it fall off the cliff and not have these liquidity concerns that could eventually impact some of our investment decisions.
So where is that? Where is that? Oh, Kevin, is that your old hand or?
Yeah, it's my old hand. Sorry.
Okay.
No further questions for me, but thanks again.
Thank you. All right. Sounds like we're not ready to vote on anything today, and that's fine. I don't want y'all to have this impression that somehow I was pushing that. I wasn't sure where we were. So, is there any more discussion on this topic for now?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I will let the board know that next month's agenda is going to be fairly packed. So we'll have Callan in to do probably a capital markets expectation overview. They'll talk about the fixed income portfolio, make some recommendations around that. We'll also probably have what's looking like two disability applications that the board will need to review. I think the performance report is also coming out from Callan. So it is going to be a fairly lengthy meeting to get through it. And we'll have, I do believe we'll have some finality on this item, at which time the board could decide to take a vote on these assumption changes, because by that time I will have had opportunity to revisit with the city manager's office with the updated information that Dana and Paul have provided and will provide. So just FYI, February is going to be a busy meeting as I sit here today and contemplate the agenda.
Okay. We appreciate the update. And let's see how things go as we move forward. My comment a few minutes ago about too many options is I was dialing back in my head. I read a lot of behavioral economics, and there's a lot of issues about choice. And, you know, we have this sense often that more is better. You know, if I've got three options, five is better. And I just want to be sure that as a board, we're not sitting here, you know, voting on, well, you know, maybe we should do this. No, let's tweak it. And before you know it, we're just spending a lot of time on stuff that at the end of the day is a bunch of assumptions going out a long time. And that making a good decision is important, but getting to the nth is not, is my concern. So Art and I can chat as we get closer about how perhaps to manage that process in a way that gives us an opportunity to make a good decision without getting in the weeds. That's my thought.
Mark, I see Jim has his hand up.
Well, go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
Yeah, right. First, Mark, I agree with you. Too many options is a bad thing for everybody. I've talked to people with funds offering like 50 options for their clients, and that just, it's ridiculous. They can't, they're looking to pare it down by dozens. So keeping this simple down to three options and analyzing those pretty thoroughly, I think is pretty good. I would like, though, for us to have a defined goal in mind. Can we tentatively schedule a vote, say, for 3 months out? Would that be a reasonable thing to do? I'm wondering what the consensus of opinion is here.
What's the thinking? Kevin?
I think we can make a vote much sooner than that, or make a decision much sooner than that. I think that we have more than sufficient data and information at this point. So I would expect that, you know, at the next meeting, probably within 10 minutes, we can put forth a motion and have some discussion on that, possibly modify it and make a decision. So at least from my perspective, I don't see a need for more information for me, but certainly if other committee members, board members want that, obviously we will then need to get it. I think the big thing step we have now is just to make sure, you know, we show a fair representation to the city of some of these issues. And I do think, as I mentioned earlier, Art, I think it's probably worthy to dial down that extreme case just to be more consistent with what played out in 2008, 2009, which is something a person can relate to.
Well, Kevin, one thing I want to bring up is I see this as three separate votes on each of the three options, because I'm prepared to say yes on two and no on one. So I think this discussion may be more than 10 minutes.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. And given what we're looking at in February, it may well be March that, you know, I want to be sure that we do have adequate time, both because we need to have adequate time, and I don't want somebody someday to look at this and say they spent 5 minutes on it and look where we ended up. So
sure. And March would be fine with the way I look at it too.
Yeah, I think we're on a path to making this decision soon, killing that freaking analogy. All right. What else for today, Art? Is there anything we need to know that we haven't yet discussed? I think we're at the end of the agenda.
Yeah, no, Mr. Chairman, I think you guys hit all of the high points. I did emphasize this point to Joyce and Liana several times, and it was noted in the materials I send them that the board is able to act independent of their decisions. And I want to make sure that that's clear to this governing body as well. I understand, obviously understand that we want to make sure that we take the city's feedback, but it is within the board's right. And I made sure to emphasize that to our city leadership as well. And I think we're on the right path. Being judicious and diligent on this topic is certainly appropriate given the long-term ramifications that it has on the plan. And I do, from my perspective, while the board may not necessarily need all of the information that I asked Dana for, I will probably certainly need it to answer the questions that come before me when I'm talking to the city manager or his folks. So I'll circle back with Dana and get the information that I need. Dana, one of the questions that they asked, it's a good question, is if the board chose to close the amortization period, if things got bad, would it then leave the board the option to reopen it? Or
I don't think you're ever locked in, and if things did get extreme and you have a huge loss that you're paying off and you're not getting any recovery, I think it's within the board's power to extend that amortization to give the city relief.
Okay. So that being said, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any other additional items, and we'll see you guys in February pending the vote to adjourn.
All right. Jim, is that an old hand?
Yes, it was an old hand.
Okay, very good. All right. I think that I will simply declare that we are adjourned, and unless Art, you tell me we have to have a vote. We will see you all at the end of February. Be well, stay safe, and talk with you soon. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you
as well. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.